Father Jason returned to the rectory while the Donovans went to stay with Ted's parents nearby. Once again, the phenomena traveled along with them. Ted Donovan never told his 75-year-old parents what was happening to his family. Sure, the burden of such knowledge would be enough to petrify them. Yet that night, as everyone went to sleep at Grandma and Grandpa's, the activity let go. Small objects levitated, pictures left the walls, and did you hear that? Knockings erupted around the house at Grandma and Grandpa's. Did you hear that? Knockings erupted all around the house. The problem was not enough to be troublesome on Tuesday night, but Wednesday night the whole house was resonating with merciless poundings. They're Grandma and Grandpa's. I can be at home with you and bring my dog, can I? Huh? No, I think if we all brought our dogs, it'd be too many, but... The problem was not enough to be troublesome on Tuesday night, but Wednesday night the whole house was resonating with merciless poundings. The next morning, bathroom faucets and plumbing fixtures were violently wrenched from the wall by some unimaginable strong force. Want me to continue?
Yes, sir.
Without trying to explain the situation, Ted called a plumber to repair the damage, packed up his family, and left. I bet that Grandma and Grandpa is still trying to figure out what happened. Father Jason was affected in a rather more sinister and ominous way. For the past 2 weeks, he had witnessed the most incredible phenomena caused by the demonic. This theological devil had taken on real proportions, and he truly felt in danger. Indeed, a spirit from the Donovan house had followed him, too. The first time, he saw a dark, black, cylindrical form blocking his way in the narrow hall leading to his quarters. On the remaining nights, it posted itself in the hallway, keeping him a prisoner in his modest cell all night long. At the same time Ted's parents' house was experiencing damage, Father Jason was shaving when before his very eyes the bathroom light fixture went off and then disassembled itself from the ceiling. One by one, the parts floated down and landed in the sink. Down. On Thursday, April 25th, the Warrens returned from upstate New York. Having canceled other appointments and worked their schedule so they could fully concentrate on the Donovan case. Do you know how long it takes to train a dog to raise his hair on the back of his... I strung this story out till I accomplished the job. On Thursday, April 25th, the Warrens returned from upstate New York. Having canceled other appointments and worked their schedule so they could fully concentrate on the Donovan case. They met Father Jason at a nearby restaurant to discuss the latest developments. Now, you remember, in the earlier story, the dogs were asleep and the hair was standing straight up on their back. Now, he's got to go to sleep first. Turn the lights down over there. Who did that? On Thursday, April 25th, the Warrens returned from upstate New York. Having canceled other appointments and worked their schedule so they could fully concentrate on the Donovan case. They met Father Jason at a nearby restaurant to discuss the latest developments. The Donovans were nowhere to be found that morning, but Ted had given the priest a spare key to the house. Ed suggested it might be a good idea to go into the house without the family around to influence matters one way or another. From the restaurant, Ed, Lorraine, and Father Jason drove directly to the Donovan house. Since no one knew what had gone on inside while the family was away, Ed decided it would be best if he first went inside the home alone. Upon unlocking the front door, Ed discovered the whole place had been systematically vandalized. Lamps, tables, chairs, books, pictures, clothing, and furniture were strewn around the living room. The smell, too, was utterly repulsive. Anything that was fluid had been dumped and left to decompose. Walking through the house, Ed found beds turned over, drawers pulled out, linen scattered everywhere. Indeed, anything movable seemed to have been ripped, torn, or turned upside down. In the kitchen, the contents of the pantry and refrigerator had been dumped in a pile on the floor with dinner plates and silverware heaped on top of that. Sheer insanity. Heading back down the hallway, Ed suddenly realized something was awry. A moment later, the house began to violently rumble and shake as if an earthquake had just struck. I'm reading from The Demonologist by Gerald Brittle, The Strange Case of the Donovans. Fearing the house might actually collapse on top of him, Ed tried to get to the front door, but he couldn't move. At the same time, outside, Lorraine, who was parapsychological, you remember, Lorraine picked up on the fact that Ed was in jeopardy. When she and Father Jason reached the front door, they saw Ed walking dazedly through the living room, his shirt covered with blood. Upon removing him outside, they discovered Now, I brought a lot of books tonight. I brought the scholarly Neuschaff Herzog Encyclopedia of Religious Knowledge. I don't want anybody to think that I'm a nut because I have decided that it's time for someone to intelligently look at the subject of demonology and the devil. Now, this is probably the classic of classics, the Neuschaff Herzog Encyclopedia of Religious Knowledge. If you could find a set somewhere, in fact, if there is a source for them, I'd market them in our bookstore. So many this is volume 3, just like an encyclopedia. There's nothing in the religious world that you can't find articles written by famous and well-known scholars on the subject. So I said, let's check what they say about demons. The Greek daimon, diminutive daimonemon, the original of the English demon, did not connote necessarily the idea of evil. Originally, in the Greek word, I'm going to get back to the demonologist, it was rather neutral. Might even be used as a synonym of theos, for theos, God. Very few people remember or know that. Originally, the word was neutral and could be used as a synonym for theos in the Greek, God. It's like faith. Originally, the word faith was neutral. Faith was an action, pisteo, an action based upon belief, supported by confidence, and belief never qualified as pisteo. In the ancient Greek world, it was neutral. You couldn't exist without faith because it was any act based on any belief sustained by enough confidence that you could keep acting. Thus, the action of walking based upon the confidence that our feet will stay on the ground because of the belief, primitive through habit, scientific through a knowledge of the principle of gravity, would be called faith, pisteo in Greek. Neutral. The only choice any man had was the object of his belief and confidence that motivated his action. When the New Testament was written, as though God reached down and in the semantical stream plucked a word out and said, I like it. I will call it pisteo if the action is based upon a belief sustained by confidence in God's faithfulness to his word. And everything else was called apistis. Action based upon a belief sustained by confidence that took you in the wrong direction. Now, if you think about it for a moment, when it was neutral, whatever anybody's action was based upon as belief or confidence that motivated his action, anyone else doing anything else was apistis. He was pistis, they were apistis. When God monopolized the word and made only that act based upon belief in God's faithfulness to his word qualify as faith, everything else became apistis. Well, likewise, the word daimon was neutral. It was neither good nor evil. It was synonymous with their word for God. Along came the Greek translation of the Old Testament and the Greek New Testament, and theos became the name applied to the Jehovah of the Old Testament, the good and all-powerful and ultimate victorious God, and daimons to those opposing forces against him. But that wasn't the way it started. It was also generally employed to designate a tutelary genius and came to be applied to any departed soul. In the Septuagint of the Old Testament, in the New Testament, and in the Christian usage, the connotation is sinister, always involves an evil spirit. And then page after page, one of the finest expositions, in fact, when I get down to serious discussion of the theology of demonism and the demoniacs, I will probably read all six of these pages to show the historic background. I also brought tonight, if I decide to get on it, I brought the Jewish People's Almanac, their background. There's a whole section on demons and spirits in the Jewish tradition and the history of exorcism and the old ancient saying that they utter to protect themselves. I brought the book on the festivals of the Jewish year and the feasts mentioned by Zechariah that were introduced into their religious calendar after they came back from Babylon. One of them is very close to an activity that relates to the origin of Halloween, because in Babylon, the month of Tebeth possessed an especially gloomy character as being that in which the dead were believed to ascend from the nether world and stalk the earth, and that it's stated expressly in a Babylonian calendar that on the 10th day it's dangerous for this reason to walk in the streets. And out of that experience in Babylon became the roots, or came forth one of the roots of one of their feast days. I'm racing through that to say, you don't have to be a nut to talk about demonology. And these people are not nuts. These are Catholic lay demonologists. Stay. Just go to sleep so your hair can raise. These are sensible, intelligent people. Ed and Lorraine Warren, noted as one of about a dozen, it's too hot in here, Mike, about a dozen key demonologists in the Catholic Church. They're devout Catholics. They lecture in universities. They were called in as the experts in the Amityville horror case. They were called by the superintendent of West Point to deal with what the general who was the commandant embarrassedly called a ghost. They are well known and reputed. When I read their stories, every bone in my body and my academic training says this couldn't be true. Too unbelievable. But because of the source, I give it credence. In my own experience and because of biblical knowledge, I know it could be true. Now, part of my reason for being is to convince as many people as I can, you don't have to bore a hole in your head and suck your brains out to be a Christian. You don't have to close your mind to some narrow path with blinders on to be a Christian. And Christianity should not have a worldview or a frame of reference so narrow that when you discover it was wrong, you have to abandon God. That's the flat earth mentality. Because it is claimed God's word says the earth is flat, which it never said, derived from a four corners of the earth philosophy. To discover the earth is round is to abandon God's word. I lost my faith in university having grown up as a preacher's kid. Became a total agnostic, changed majors on every degree, came back to faith from a hard study of the resurrection for 3.5 years. I've spent my life pursuing knowledge in every field, and all it's done for me is strengthen my faith in God. Now, I'm on many subjects, as those that have watched know, but right now we're on the subject of the possibility of supernatural forces at work. Demon, to be exact. Satan. The Bible's full of it. Saul in the Old Testament, for the Jews that are listening, was oppressed and harassed by a familiar spirit. Saul in the Old Testament went to the witch at Endor, and she brought forth something that Saul perceived as Samuel's spirit that talked to him. A good angel killed 180,000 Assyrian troops, in one night. Lucifer and Michael contested over the body of Moses, and Michael dare not accost him, but respectfully had to rebuke him in the name of the Lord. The Old Testament eventually names one of the demon angels in the hierarchy. Now, there is one school of scholars that want to take the book of Jude out of the New Testament. I'd rather take James out than Jude. Jude's got much stronger authority. But Jude, it was argued, should be taken out because Jude gives credence to the apocryphal book of Enoch. Because it's in the apocryphal book of Enoch that the quote comes, second chapter. Behold, I'll read to you. I happen to have the book with me tonight. You say, you're going to get onto this other thing? Sure I am. Right away. This is all new stuff. I'm not reviewing for you. Apocryphal book of Enoch. Behold, he comes with 10,000s of his saints to execute judgment upon them and to destroy the wicked and reprove all the carnal for everything which the sinful and ungodly have done committed against him. Jude, that one chaptered letter sandwiched in the closing passages before the book of Revelation. One little book, one chapter, only verses. 14th and 15th verse quotes Enoch. And there were some scholars in the Middle Ages that wanted to take Jude out of the New Testament because it gave credence to Enoch. Well, I can go through Paul's writings and John's writings. You have to get rid of the fourth gospel, which quotes directly from Enoch. Paul obviously used it. John used it. Jude used it to Tertullian, who had more to do with canonizing Scripture than probably anybody else, thought it had the right to be canonized. And in this book of Enoch, it goes into detail about what those sons of God did who cohabitated with the women on earth, that has just an oblique reference, very brief, in the book of Genesis. They're called watchers in the book of Enoch. Before all these things, chapter 12, section 3 reads, Enoch was concealed. Now, I've said many, many times, the Old Testament Scripture and the New Testament Scripture is rather incomplete about Enoch. We just have the reference, Enoch walked and talked with God and was not, for God took him. I've already told you, to you that have listened to me teach on the pyramid, I believe Enoch built the pyramid. And they say, well, he is dead before it was built. Baloney. That's based upon a cartouche in the upper chambers above the king's chamber, which is put in by Colonel Weiss. That's an outright forgery, and I'll prove it to you. I believe Enoch built it. He didn't build it. He got the plan, gave it to somebody else. But I believe he built it. And when it says he was not, for God took him, where? The book of Enoch just says he was concealed. Nor did any one of the sons of men know where he was concealed, where he had been and what had happened. Now, I've been teaching on Atlantis. I've been teaching on the pyramid. I've been teaching on the Bermuda Triangle. I believe Atlantis existed. I believe that's where the kingdom center of the pre-flood earth was. And I believe what Josephus says in the first century happened, that the descendants of Seth, knowing a Holocaust was going to hit this earth, preserved the knowledge for the future in two monuments, one in brick and one in stone. The one in brick has disappeared, and in the first century, Josephus is saying the one in stone is still standing to this day in the land of Sirius, which is the land of Egypt. And he meant the pyramid, which put a prophetic pattern of world history inside in the right time in the first half of the 1800s to be revealed. We've been teaching on it. And I believe that the kingdom was in Atlantis, and God took Enoch because he could trust him, one who walked and talked with him, and concealed him and took him to the area of Egypt and gave him angelic beings called watchers to help him build it, and that's how it was built. Now, you come up with your theory. I'm a very open-minded man. I've spent 2 years trying to find a human explanation for it. Bechtel Corporation couldn't build it. I believe that it's primitive to make everything you can't explain explained as supernatural. But I also believe it's diminutive to be so scientific you close your mind to the extraterrestrial and to the supernatural, which, by the way, means literally more natural, a dimension that goes beyond our little puny brains. Scientists are just as closed-minded in their own flat earth theories as the church was in the Middle Ages, some of them. Now, this book of Enoch says, before all these things, Enoch was concealed, nor did any one of the sons of men know where he was concealed, where he had been, what had happened. He was wholly engaged with the holy ones and with the watchers in his days. I, Enoch, was blessing the great Lord and King of Peace, and behold, the watchers called me Enoch the scribe. He was inscribing the prophecy and the history of the world in stone. And the Lord said to me, Enoch, scribe of righteousness, go tell the watchers of heaven who have deserted the lofty sky and their holy everlasting station, who have been polluted with women. By the way, somebody called from Mesquite, Texas, and said, well, I'm so glad to finally get a lady on the phone. I've always got men. And I was beginning to think he might be a chauvinist or something. Well, I'm glad we got that straightened out. Too cold in here now, Mike. Then the Lord said to me, am I boring you? You want me to get back to the Donovans? Well, it takes a little background. Now, Winston, don't hit me with your cold tongue unexpectedly in the middle of this story. You're liable to see your master go to the ceiling. what I said. Then the Lord said to me, Enoch, scribe of righteousness, go tell the watchers of heaven who have deserted the lofty sky and their holy everlasting station, have been polluted with women, and have done as the sons of men do by taking to themselves wives, and who have been greatly corrupted on the earth, that on the earth they shall never obtain peace and remission of sin, for they shall not rejoice in their offspring. They shall behold the slaughter of their beloved, shall lament for the destruction of their sons, and shall petition forever, but shall not obtain mercy and peace. Then Enoch, passing on, said to Azazel, thou shalt not obtain peace, a leader in the hierarchy of these watchers. They all became terrified to skip along and tremble, beseeching me to write for them a memorial of supplication, that they might obtain forgiveness. You then have Enoch on a long journey, praying and listening to these construction members of his crew, that on their days off got involved with the daughters of men on the earth, and that's in the book of Genesis, praying, and finally gets an answer. 15th chapter. God addressing Enoch, who prayed for mercy to come on these watchers. Then addressing me, he spoke and said, here, you're going to sleep. Get ready. Hear, neither be afraid, O righteous Enoch, thou scribe of righteousness. Approach hither and hear my voice. Go say to the watchers of heaven who have sent thee to pray for them, you ought to pray for men, not men for you. Wherefore have you forsaken the lofty and holy heaven which endures forever and have lain with women? I may have somebody down somewhere listening to me in these United States saying, well, a King James good enough for Paul is good enough for me. Well, the apocryphal scriptures, these are pseudo-epigraphs here, but the apocryphal scriptures were a part of the King James, taken out by the Puritans, finalized in the removal by the American and English Bible societies. The very people who canonized the scriptures as we have it look favorably on Enoch. Now, I'm not asking that it be canonized. I'm just saying it's rather interesting. You being spiritual, well, you've defiled yourself with daughters of men, taken to yourselves wives, have acted like the sons of the earth, and have begotten an impious offspring. The King James in Genesis says, they begat giants, evil men. Ye being spiritual, holy, and possessing a life which is eternal, have polluted yourself with women, have begotten in carnal blood, have lusted in the blood of men, have done as those who are flesh and blood do. These, however, die and perish. Therefore, by giving to them wives, that they might cohabitate with them, that sons might be born of them. That this might be transacted upon earth. But you from the beginning were made spiritual, possessing a life which is eternal, not subject to death forever. Therefore, I made not wives for you. Now the giants who have been born of spirit and flesh shall be called upon earth evil spirits. And on earth shall be their habitation. Evil spirits shall proceed from their flesh, because they were created from above. From the holy watchers was their beginning and primary foundation. Evil spirits shall be they be upon the earth, and the spirits of the wicked shall they be called. The habitation of the spirits of heaven shall be in heaven, but upon earth shall be the habitation of terrestrial spirits who born on earth. The spirits of the giants shall be like clouds, which shall oppress, corrupt, fall, contend, and bruise upon the earth. They shall cause lamentation. No food shall they eat. They shall be thirsty. They shall be concealed. They come forth during the days of slaughter and destruction. I'm not recommending that as true. I'm just saying that's one theory for the origin of some demon forces. Now, the Bible makes it clear that Satan and a third of heaven's angels rebelled and were cast forth. God created Adam, gave him dominion. He gave it to Satan. Satan became the prince of the power of the air. We read in the book of Revelation 200 million demons chained to be released in the tribulation near the river Euphrates. Out of the abyss will come Abaddon leading a horde of locust demons, and those are not modern helicopters with gunship mounts on them. They're demons. And the book of Enoch suggests the departed spirits of these weird offspring of the union between these watchers and the daughters of men on earth. Without a body, the body dying in the flood, the spirit left to roam the earth to bring destruction. Now, take your choice. The point I'm making is, this is not a subject for just nuts. It has a history from the earliest record. The serpent was there to tempt. Jesus confronted demons. You've got to find a spot in between, hot and cold. Jesus confronted demons, even in the synagogue. Now, these Catholic lay people, which is where I've started on the subject, are experts at confronting supernatural forces. The Donovan household had a 19-year-old daughter who, with a Ouija board, began to ask, "Is there anybody there?" A spirit communication begun for many months. She asked the spirit to manifest. The day after she asked it to manifest, vandalism started in the house that turned to horror. Levitation, ripping of boards that weren't ripped off, blood-curdling screams in the house, things moved, rocks raining on the roof. He called in a priest. The priest didn't know what to do with it. Called the cops, who had said to call a priest first. Found a monk who recommended the Warrens. Called the Warrens down. They came and witnessed, even photographed some of the goings-on in Trumbull, Connecticut. I've said I want to check the story out because of my research on the people. I start from the frame of reference they're credible. But it is so strange, my nature disbelieves. I'm going to hire some ghostbuster to go check it out, but in the meantime, I'm reading it. And Ed and Lorraine Warren are back at the house, having witnessed the terror so bad that they asked the Donovans to leave when they were not there. They're now back in the house with the father. Father Jason, the Catholic priest, they've requested permission of the Catholic Church for an exorcism because the exorcist was in the movies. The church was afraid of criticism. They had to get a priest to verify the supernatural activity before the exorcism could continue, or rather begin even. And at the point I'm picking up with about the briefest resume I've given, they have come into the house and the poundings picked up on the roof and the outside of the house, which then transferred themselves to the inside walls, the demonologist by Gerald Brittle. I've had people say, if you don't finish it tonight, I'm going to go buy the book. Try it. Try it. See how many libraries have got it checked out. Poundings picked up on the roof and the outside of the house, which then transferred themselves to the inside wall. Make it dark in here. Over the course of an hour, the poundings made their way up the hallway, then ominously stopped. All of a sudden, sharp, jarring raps. Now, I'll tell you when to go to the dog. Let him sleep. Stay with me now. Okay? Now I'm getting serious. When I see his hair rise, I'll tell you. Let him sleep. Make it more comfortable for you, kid. Stay down. Down. Poundings picked up on the roof and the outside of the house, which then transferred themselves to the inside walls. Over the course of an hour, the poundings made their way up the hallway, then ominously stopped. Oh, that's the wrong. How did I miss my place? Oh, here we are. I'm sorry. Down. Stay. Heading back down the hallway, Ed suddenly... Do you realize people on radio don't know what I'm doing? When I give those commands, well-trained dogs in every house are dropping to the floor. Heading back down the hallway, Ed suddenly realized something was awry. That's where I was. A moment later, the house began to violently rumble and shake as if an earthquake had just struck. Fearing the house might actually collapse on top of him, Ed tried to get to the front door, but couldn't move. At the same time, outside, Lorraine picked up on the fact that Ed was in jeopardy. When she and Father Jason reached the front door, They saw Ed walking dazedly through the living room, his shirt covered with blood. Upon removing him outside, they discovered That's where we were, wasn't it? Upon removing him outside, they discovered Am I boring you? Am I frustrating you? Upon removing him outside, they discovered on his left arm You always need to read a ghost story at Halloween time. You know, Halloween really means All Saints Day. Isn't that strange? They call it All Saints Day. I considered most saints spooks anyway. Not a bad name. Now, you should always read a ghost story on Halloween with a pipe and a dog at your feet and a good hard hat in case the rocks start falling. Upon removing him outside, they discovered on his left arm two long, deep slashes forming the sign of the cross. Ed had them wash off the wound and then bandaged it tightly with gauze and tape from the first aid kit in the car. Ed explained that psychic slashes started to be thrown around the room, cutting into the walls and drapes. I can't read this. This is too unbelievable. Do you think I'm a nut? I'm finding it as hard to believe as you. But it's a credible source. Ed explained that psychic slashes started to be thrown around the room, cutting into the wall and drapes. He was cut on the arm because he threw his arms up to cover his face, feeling that the forces in the home intended to mutilate him. Ed believed the attack was directed specifically at him, for it was he who originally challenged the forces in the home with religious provocation and who threatened to end their rampage by alerting church authorities to the case. However, it was also Ed's rationale that it was the Donovans who were ultimately in danger. Let's get down to business. Is that okay with you? The spirits took over the Donovan house as a first step in a quest to take over the whole family, says Ed. In cases of this sort, however, Lorraine and I have found that for the most part, people possess very strong willpower. Therefore, no alien spirit is just going to arrive and take over a person or family all that easily. That's why oppression phenomena tend to vary in intensity from one case to another. It's too cold now, Mike. The spirits or spirits will methodically work on one emotion or even a dozen until you're vulnerable and irrational from the strain. Everyone has a breaking point, but a weak-willed person, someone, say, on the verge of suicide, can be taken over pretty easily. The spirit doesn't need to go off on a binge of activity, but with a strong-willed activity, or but with a strong-willed individual, the spirit will throw everything at him, including the kitchen sink. The oppressed may learn he can't do anything about the activity if he doesn't know how. So rather than fight it, he stops resisting and falls passive to the oppressing forces. When the spirit, when the person's will is thrown open for domination by such a give-up, that's why I preach for you to keep swinging. The oppressing spirit's next step is possession. Faith and possession are mutually exclusive. Because faith is 90% courage. Not the kind of faith that limits it to belief. You resist the devil, he flees from you. That's one of the principles. Don't ever give up. On the other hand, if the person doesn't give up, the phenomena will go on or intensify until the stress becomes unbearable. Simply, not giving up is not enough. You've got to know how to get rid of him. But that's the next subject. A mental breakdown would be the next logical step. But at the point where a breakdown should happen, usually possession or some other catastrophe will occur instead. Violent, inhuman spirits capable of causing fires could easily burn the house down with everyone in it. The worse the phenomena became, the closer the Donovans came to either experiencing possession or death. Thus, now, more than ever, the case had transmuted into a confrontation with the Donovans, pawns in a much bigger game. As a matter of survival, Ed and Father Jason. Now, my Ghostbuster that I hire has got to find this Father Jason. And I'm told the Donovans still live in, or now live in San Diego. And there was an article about him that I have my secretary researching. I think I did. I gave it to my legal secretary, Melena, the other night. Here, didn't I? Yeah. Researching it to find that article about the Donovans in San Diego. I'm like you. This is so hard to believe. But I don't believe it should be ignored. And what? If it's true. Now, tentatively, I have to believe it is because of the source. I know biblically it could happen. Thus, now more than ever, the case had transmuted into a confrontation. As a matter of survival, Ed and Father Jason had to stop these determined, maniacal forces. To back down would simply give the demonic a green light to kill, possess, or torment the Donovans indefinitely, and also to torment Ed and Father Jason for the rest of their lives. And you can write that down as a law. They won't go away.
This is the end of Side 1. For the rest of the teaching, please turn the tape over for Side 2. Thank you.